Ow!
Those uncomfortable things we do for beauty.
Oof. Ouch.
And when it comes to whiter teeth, same story. Until now. Enjoy rinse-free whitening with new Sensodyne Clinical White. You'll get clinically proven whitening technology in an enamel-safe formula for two shades whiter teeth and 24/7 sensitivity protection. Sensodyne Clinical White. A whiter smile without the wince.
This is the Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. Today's Wednesday, March 2nd. I'm Robert Mays. Fun show for you guys today. We're going to continue with our series talking to some of our athletic team writers about the most interesting teams, the teams that kind of control the 2022 offseason. We chatted today with Bo Wolf, one of our Eagles writers, and Matt Schneidman, our Packers writer. Those teams might be in the market for quarterbacks. We don't know who their quarterbacks are going to be. Hard to do this exercise without both of those. Really enjoyed those two conversations. Before we get to that, though, I'm very excited to welcome my good friend, Nate Tice. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. We were separated for a couple weeks, and we're right back together. We need to go to the Northeast now, so we can put the pins up on a map, and that'll hold up.
Well, we're going to be in Vegas for the draft.
We are
crisscrossing the United States here. So we are at Radio Row at the Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine. It's funny that you and I are here doing this together, because independent of working together, you and I have spent so much time in this city at this event together as friends over the last decade or so. And it's kind of bittersweet because this is the first time we're doing this together, and it's probably the last combine in Indianapolis.
Isn't that
weird?
That is weird to think about. I actually was just kind of like humble bragging to my wife. I was like, man, I actually know this city pretty well. Like, it was muscle memory.
This is my 13th one of these.
Oh, my goodness.
13.
I've done 7, and I've been here 2 other times separately, and it's like, yeah. And that's how it felt. I walked by, and like, it was muscle memory getting to the convention center. I put it in my Google Maps. I was like, I don't need this.
You know where everything is.
Hard right turn, hard left turn. Here I am. I'm at the convention center. No, I know. And that's what's kind of funny. It's like walking by, you know, a little shuffleboard and walking by the train station and all the other spots that we've met up over the years. This is a different one.
It's funny because the schedule has changed.
Yes.
So now that the GM and coach conversations and interviews are happening, their press conferences are happening on Tuesday, everyone was here on Monday. Mm-hmm. It used to happen a little bit later in the week, and I remember I used to come in on Tuesdays, and no one was here on Tuesday. It was just like the low-level scouts were here on Tuesday. So I would get here, and we would go to Kilroy's on Tuesday, and really, again, it was just like staffers were there, and we would just play shuffleboard until like 3 in the morning before the actual week would start.
Yep. It was like the prelims. It was the setup. It was the calm before the storm. And it was actually, that's like the most fun day because it was just like,
it's chill. It's not relaxed. A scene yet. Yes. Last night it was already a scene.
Okay. I'm right ready for that. For those who don't know, I landed like an hour and a half ago. So this is like perfect. So I checked in the hotel and I was like, and he was like, hey, let's go record. Perfect. We're doing it. So that's what's funny too, is that before it was like, I had a whole day. It was hurry up and wait. Hurry up and wait. Hurry up and wait. And now it's like, no, we're just going to go right into it. We're going to get right into the workouts. I'm still trying to figure out what the hell, like, everyone's, like, clock is going to be so weird with the night workouts.
Yeah.
Like, that is so strange because is this the second year they've done this or the third year? I can't remember.
I think it's the second year.
Second, and last year was the COVID year, so it's kind of, it was different. So this is very, very strange, I think, for everybody in this building, how this whole ebb and flow is going
to
be.
So you and I obviously have a deep history as it relates to the Combine. The Combine as an event has changed in a lot of ways over the last decade or so as we've been doing this. The way that they moved into prime time, but also the way that teams are treating it.
Yeah.
Think about the fact that the Jets coaching staff is not here. That came out today that Peter Schrager reported. The Rams coaching staff hasn't come in a couple different years. McVay has his like 18 hours at the combine that he does every single year, which is the envy of other coaches around the league, by the way. Other coaches are pretty envious of Sean McVay's combine time. The Niners coaching staff is not here. Teams are treating this a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are teams not coming to watch the workouts themselves are being looked at a little bit differently. What on-field performance and how the drills ultimately play into draft decisions are treated differently. So I wanted to do a little bit of a combine preview through the lens of what does still matter. what really does take hold? What are people paying attention to? If you're watching this with a scouting eye, what is still valuable about this event? So if you were taking a step back, you're putting on your scouting hat again here. You're back where in Atlanta, wherever. At the shuffleboard. It's 2012 again, or 2013. Yeah. I guess in Atlanta, 2014.
14, yep.
So we go back 20. Let's say it's 2014. You got your Falcons cap on here.
Yep.
What is still valuable to you? What are you watching? Are there more positions that are more important than others? Like, what are the different considerations that you're taking on as you're watching this event as a scout?
The classic line is, the medicals and interviews are the most important thing, which I'll just have to get that off the chest, because that is, and that's why the McVays and the Shanahans and Salas of the world are going, hey, I'm getting the medicals. I can watch film.
And the interviews are on Zoom.
And the interviews are on Zoom.
You can watch the interviews happen.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it's kind of funny how, for years and years and years, coaches and execs would just go, well, it's just the interviews and medicals that matter. And then no one actually did anything about it. They just still kept going because maybe they wanted to play shuffleboard at Killer Rides, those types of things. To me, it's really a threshold test. It's we split hairs, and it's fun to say a guy ran a 4.28 or 4.32 or a guy jumped 11 feet and all that. But really, you're just looking for the outliers. And that's every position. You'd also want to see, maybe a guy, wow, he just ran a 4.4 flat. Man, he played like a 4.7. What did I miss? Yeah. Am I missing it, or is that just the level of competition? Is that something I missed there? Any of those that just will flash on the good end or the bad end. Running back runs a 4.75, and it's, yes, these guys game the system. They are trained for these tests. They still matter, though.
If you fall short of those thresholds, it's even more alarming.
Yes, it is.
Because this is a test in so many different ways. If you don't hit a certain weight like you were supposed
to,
those to me are the more important considerations, because so much time and effort and intentionality goes into this event. If you don't take the time and the care to show that you've invested in it, that should be a red flag for people.
I don't really want to get into this, but that's what the drug test used to be at the combine. Everyone knew what the drug test was coming. It was more like an idiot test.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you knew. Get it out of your system.
This isn't a moral legislation of whether marijuana should be illegal in the NFL or not. It's you knew this was happening.
You knew this was happening. You knew this was the biggest interview of your life, really. The biggest week, the biggest camp, however you want to put it. Same thing with the testing. It's everybody, NFL, we go over this. It's being consistent. It's week 14. Your team is not that good. You're under 500. You're hurt. You're banged up. How do you run then? Here you have the perfect situation. You're wearing track shoes. You've been trained. You've been on your best diet you've probably ever been, because you're a college kid eating Cheetos for dinner.
We ran our 40s barefoot the night after you and I went to a meal together where I ate two baguettes as part of the meal.
The baguettes are so good.
Not just two baguettes. So my friend who loves that restaurant, it's called Republic in Los Angeles, and my friend loves that restaurant. And I told him that I went there. And he was like, oh, that's great. And I was like, yeah, I ate two baguettes. He's like, why didn't you eat a meal? I was like, no. I ate two baguettes, and then I ate my meal. And then we ran the 40 the next day with no shoes on.
No shoes, pants on.
Slightly different preparation.
Didn't stop sweating. I realized I only had brought one undershirt for the entire week. So the rest of the week, I had no undershirt because I had sweated in that one. So that was great. But no, that was that was a little bit different of experience. But then, again, we were able to run our blah, 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 6 flat 40. But for these guys, this is the best day. Everything's primed. They're stretched out. They've been massaged up for 4 weeks. And then if you go out and run slow, it's like, oh boy, what are you going to do? What are you going to do when you're all banged up and everything isn't perfect? And that's really what it is. Like you said, it's a threshold test. I shouldn't say an idiot test, but it's an idiot test, or it's just this is the best we're going to get out of you. We need to know what it is.
They are changing the on-field drills for a lot of positions, though, right? What sense do you have of that? Do you know specifically what sort of tweaks that they made?
They're just making ones more useful, shorter ones. Like, there's offensive line drills where the guys are doing, shadow steps for, 10 minutes. And I was like, is this a conditioning test, or is this actually useful? So I think really it's more shortening, making it more pertinent to actually what they do. Really, it's just tweaking. It's drills everyone has done. But I think before it almost seemed like a lot of these tests were conditioning tests. I always thought it was kind of funny. But I was like, that was 25 years ago, probably when they first did these drills 30 years ago. It was to see if these guys are in shape and have been training. Now everybody has an agent. Now everybody's training. So it's a little different. So really it's just tightening down and maybe making some more of I think some of the defensive drills, it's more like pertinent to what those positions are doing, as far as you're going to have an edge guy dropping into coverage and those types of things.
In terms of the timed tests, are there ones that matter for some positions more than others? Like, I know you look at certain thresholds with the short shuttle for offensive linemen.
Yep.
A lot of very good offensive linemen do well in the short shuttle at every stage of the draft. Guys that were picked, Jason Kelsey, for example, right? Charles Leno had a really good short shuttle time as a seventh round pick.
Yep.
He's been a multi-year starter in the NFL. So which ones do you think are the most relevant and are the ones where if a guy does well, it's going to put off some alarm bells in your head?
Defensive tackle and 40 in a random way, because the ones that run a freaky 40, and you can get into 10s and 20s, but I'm just going to say the sprint, the sprinting event, that's when you can go, oh, shit, like this guy ran a sub 4.8. Like okay, let's circle him. He might be undersized. He might be only 280, but man, look at that, you know, because the best of the best have done that.
What did he run?
Aaron Donald ran like a 4.68.
4.68.
And for me, for edge guys, for defensive linemen, I really like to look at Broad and Three Cone. And this is just a offhand, I think it was a Reddit thread I came across years and years ago. And the guy had a threshold of 7'2", Three Cone, and 9'9", Broad Jump. As kind of like, yes, it's not the end-all, be-all. There still are outliers that do well. I want to say like Joey Bosa didn't meet one of those. But it's like you're going to have a higher percentage to have a true sack guy on the edge if they can meet those two thresholds. So those two I always look at. And
Joey Bosa's vertical was garbage. His vertical jump was in the 38th percentile. He did a 32-inch vertical.
I remember he didn't jump as well as you thought.
But his three cone was wild. I mean, it was like very, very good. And 270 pounds.
And so it's not an end-all, be-all, but it's more like, hey, if I have a guy I'm looking in the first round and they don't meet those thresholds, okay, are we sure? Or is it like just barely okay? Or if they, hey, we got this guy in the middle rounds where you're like, and he meets those thresholds. A guy that that hit these thresholds was Max Crosby. He hit both of those. So a middle round guy that you're like, oh man, well, and he's a really good athletic tester. It's 40, blah, blah, blah. But Three Cone and Broad for that position. And then the classics. I actually, one for a random one I like is running backs and bench, because I just want to see how strong they are. Because these guys are supposed to be little pocket Hercules. A lot of them, some of them are 230.
It was a clip of Nick Chubb repping out 485 on the squat rack this week. So
at first I was like, oh, yeah, I did. Oh, man, that's more than I, like, more than I've, 100 pounds.
No one around him. Yeah. Just repping it out casually.
Just hanging out. A little off-season workout. Let's just rep out almost 500 pounds. Yeah, but like those types of things, I'm trying to think some other ones. Oh, tight ends for me. Tight ends is this class. We'll get into it. Is an interesting class because there's a lot of third and fourth round types.
Mm-hmm.
And tight end, I think more than any other position, like one of my theories for tight ends and picking a tight end, especially in the middle rounds, is just find the biggest athletic freak and just move on. And then just hopefully we can develop them. that's really what I've gotten down to.
It's not the worst strategy.
I know. That's really what I've gone down to. So I think the combine for tight ends is always like one I really want to see, because some of these guys, they're all listed the same, 6'4", 250. Okay, so are they actually 6'4 and change? Are they 6'3? Do they have short arms? They have long arms? And then how they run and how they do all the other testing as well? Because tight end is a position more really one of the most important positions to be an athletic, you know, outlier.
That 2017 tight end class was the crazy testing tight end class. That was Jonnu Smith, George Kittle, like all those dudes. George Kittle ran a 4.52 at 247 pounds. And George Kittle went in the fourth round. And also 98th percentile broad jump for George Kittle.
Exactly.
Jonnu Smith ran a 4.62 at 250 pounds, 95th percentile broad jump. Like, those guys tested very, very well. They were not first or second round picks.
Yep.
Pretty useful NFL players, both of those guys.
Hopefully they can play just enough, and hopefully we have a coach that can get them onto the right path. And then, those are like perfect examples for what I'm saying, because it's just, I don't know how these guys are run. Some of these guys, the longest route they run, I'll give you an example. This guy named Kate Otten from Washington, really, really like him. I think he could be a good wide tight end. I don't think I've seen him run a route longer than like 7 or 8 yards just because of the offense he's in.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's athletic or not, because he just catches and gets whacked. So it's like, you know, I don't know if I've never seen him stride out and actually see how he runs. So you never know. That guy might run really well, or he might run a 4.9, and you never know.
All right, let's dig into some of these positions. Full disclosure, I am not versed in the draft, okay? It is March 1st. Like, the NFL season ended 2 weeks ago. I have not been watching a lot of these guys. You have been, as part of the scouting work that you're doing with Bleacher Report. You have been focusing on the quarterbacks and the skill position guys, which is going to dominate a lot of this conversation. Mm-hmm. Some of the guys you like, we're going to talk about all of that. Let's start with the quarterbacks. This week and the quarterbacks, first thing that comes into your mind?
Whew. I want to see them all run, but I'm sure when we say medicals and interviews, this interviews process for all of them is going to be huge, especially when guys are trying to break ties. Oh, man, we both view this guy as a high second rounder, a middle second rounder. Okay, but one guy went on the board and he couldn't do any of it. Or one guy went on the board and acted like he's done that play 100 times and could talk out every single thing. Is it the end-all, be-all? No, but it does matter because some of these guys get so coached up. I think for quarterbacks, more than anything, it's just the interviews. Like, that is – we.
And is it just the board stuff, or what other aspects to the interview process do you think are worthwhile and notable?
It's a fun game to me because I'm a psycho that's going on now as these players get coached up by agents. Hey, they're going to get asked you these questions. You know, they got their little crib notes on it, and then seeing what teams kind of poke and prod on that. Like, you expected us to ask a question. Do they try and challenge them, try and get them amped up? And I've seen that in interviews where they try to get the guy kind of like frazzled. And then how does he handle being frazzled? How is he still able to answer? All right, we're gonna say something like, oh, we're going to bring up a bad play. How does he handle that? We're going to bring up the bad moments, and how does he handle that? I think that's a big thing, is kind of like you want to be unflappable. Do you want to see that competitive streak? I think all the top quarterbacks are – like psycho competitors, all the top athletes in general, but especially top quarterbacks, and we get fooled by it because they can, you know, the face of the franchise type, ha, how are you doing? They're all kind of psychotic, psychotic competitors. I know Tom Brady's famous for it, Peyton Manning, all those, but all of them are. And I think that's the same thing as kind of like seeing the edge. Are they kind of like goofy, loosey, and it's like, well, we don't really like that. Or is it on the flip side where it's like, okay, this guy's locked in and we're trying to joke around with him. He's like, he wants to nail this test. And then you have to have a threshold. Is that good or bad? Going, okay, this guy's too wired.
Yeah, does he have no personality?
Personality. But this is when going into the Justin Herbert draft, that was one of the things is I wish I could have been in those rooms to interview all these guys. Because that was the thing for him, was that offense he played at Oregon was so limited. Okay, can he handle more mentally, or are they trying to hide him? Because he can't.
The answer is yes.
And the answer is way yes. The answer is they just were not creative and did not understand what they had back there.
So I want to hit a couple different categories as it relates to these positions. Who is the quarterback that you think when the on-field stuff starts is going to pop the most? Is going to be the one people are like, oh, shit. Whether it's where the ball comes out of his hands, how he's going to run. The guy who physically has a wow factor that you think is going to stand out, even if it's not the most important thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be Malik Willis. And which this is his show. It's going to be this week. He's now been prepped up to throw these drills that he's going to do. Like, one of the things with Malik is that he's inconsistent. He's more of a bundle of tools than an actual, like, put-together package. And that's what makes him exciting and also makes him freaking terrifying.
Yeah.
I understand the kind of appeal of him because he has the strongest arm in this class, and he's the most athletic one, and he's built about 220 and change. He's built like a legit
small er though, right? 6'1"?
Sure. Yeah, 6 foot and change. Yeah, 6'1". I think 6'1" max. I think official height already. I actually have it right in front of me. Yeah, he's 6 foot, 6'003", so 6 foot and a half official measurements. And that's what you got to remember is these shorter quarterbacks is that's seeing over the middle of the field, and that's actually what Malik struggles with a lot, is seeing stuff develop between the hashes and seeing stuff. It's what we've talked about with Baker. It's what we've talked about with Russell Wilson. But he has, as opposed to like a Baker of the world, he has the, I wouldn't say rare athletic gifts, but excellent athletic gifts. If he comes into the league, he'll probably be the second best rusher behind Lamar at the quarterback position.
Wow.
Yeah, because that's how
that better than Kyler.
Yeah, because he's bigger.
Wow, that's impressive. That is a statement.
Yes, and he's up there. It's two, and then Hurts is up there too. But he's more dynamic than Hurts is. But the thing is, he's only 6 foot, and he's got the huge arm. And why he can throw such a good downfield ball is because he can see it, as opposed to all this other stuff where he has to time it and all that. So that's his limitations aren't going to crop up this week because it's not him progressing on a play. It's not him, you know, actually having to read something out. It's him just running and him throwing, and he can run and throw really well, and I've heard that he's a great kid, so he's probably going to interview really well as well. So, but he's going to be huge. We're talking about on-field testing, but him too is being on the board because he ran a really simple offense, and that's, again, is that just because what they run, or is that just because what he can handle? That's what you always have to figure out.
And the other guys, their play style, just how they're going to look in these drills that you feel like is particularly intriguing to you.
Drill wise, no. Like it's not. I'll be.
I'm really
frank.
Trying to put some juice in this quarterback.
I completely be frank. It's not a great class. I'm very high on Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati. I think he'll run a lot better than people realize. I think he's the second or third favorite to run the fastest 40 for the quarterbacks. Like, he's going to be competing with Malik, but he's doing that 208, 210 pounds. And that's actually a little worse.
Stain in your voice.
I know. The sub 210 is so scary for me. And so I'm hoping it's okay. He had a long season. He's going to put some weight back on. So I think him, the on-field stuff, really. I also wanted to see, like, testing-wise, there's this kid from – this is going to be so random. EJ Perry from Brown. I saw him at the Shrine Bowl, and apparently he's going to be a really good tester. So I want to watch – actually see, is that, like, oh, he's a good tester from Ivy League? Or is he, you know, a legit NFL, like, threshold where he's a good to great athlete? A lot of these guys, too, like a Sam Howell from North Carolina, I really want to see him in drills because – throws probably one of the best deep balls in the class. Malik has a stronger arm, but he throws a very like pretty arching deep ball. Can he do anything else? And a lot of these stuff, these are new receivers he might be working with. Okay, the best quarterbacks, you always have that excuse. Hey, I'm throwing to a new guy. The best ones, it doesn't freaking matter. They just put it on the money every single time. So I want to see that.
Make it rain out here.
Yeah, exactly. You see me? And so I want to see that is – do they actually like that for a guy like Sam Howell? Corral's not thrown from Ole Miss, but Sam Howell, can he throw a timing based route with a new receiver, just learn these types of routes and actually see how he does it? Because that's really going to be one of the big question marks for him.
Is there a quarterback in this group that you think has the most to prove this week, has the most kind of at stake, the most you want, somebody you really want to see something from? Or the teams would want to see something.
I think Malik Willis a little bit. And I think that's just people trying to talk themselves into him. And I get it. Like, for Bleach Report, I have a high third round grade on him. And, you know, you give the inflation with the quarterbacks. I would take him in the middle second, kind of where those kind of Kaepernick Hertzies of the world have come out over the years. Like, that makes sense to me.
Where Jordan Love probably should have gone.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. And then you see more of these guys, you know, talking themselves into him in the first round. And I think that's why it's such a big week for him, is now teams are going, all right, that's our guy. Is that the guy we're taking a chance on?
He's there at 30. Yes. And do we make our play back up?
24, do we trade in? Yeah, all that type. And there, it's interesting. So I think for him, too, is going to be – and we're talking on-field testing. But I think for him, too, is just going to be on the board. It's just – that's going to be a question that he is going to have to answer, because it's going to be – it's not just one tier of jump going from the SEC to the NFL. And there's, you know, defenses and all that. But now imagine going from Liberty – to the NFL. And yes, guys have come from North Dakota State. Guys have come from smaller schools and have done okay early on, Trey Lance notwithstanding. But it's this guy coming in. The offense that they ran was, as I mean, I'm telling you, it's just two routes, pick one. Three routes, all right, pick one. All right, for him, it was pick one, scramble. You can do that sometimes in the NFL, and we talk about go get a bucket. He can go get that bucket, but then you also have to hit those singles and doubles when they're there, and that's going to be a question mark that people want to answer.
Well, we're going to have a lot of time to dig on
that.
And just, the kind of the big picture existential question of this quarterback class. Let's get to the receivers. Who is the guy or a couple guys that you think is going to pop the most with the on-field workouts?
Oh, boy. This receiver class is sweet. I'm very, very excited about this class. I
feel like somebody like – and when people are talking about the draft this time of year, they're talking about like a TV show that I don't watch where it sounds really fun, but I haven't gotten to it yet. That's
you're
how
aware
I feel
of
right
it.
Now.
Like
it's
a new season of something you used to watch.
It's like, oh, yeah. That's on Paramount Plus. Yeah.
I heard they're making a new Reno 911 movie.
Yeah, like, Chris Olave is like an HBO Max show that I haven't gotten there yet.
But you like the actor.
Yeah. It's exactly. His other stuff has been intriguing to me. Yeah.
James Gunn, I've heard of him. He directed Suicide Squad, right? But that, I would say for me, the one I'm most interested, I would say, if any testing or anything, is Drake London running the 40. And that's my receiver one. I'm a big fan of his just because it's the classic guy I like. He's a big ball winner, but he has more to him. And so I would say of any test.
What's he going to weigh? Did he weigh in?
They're estimating about 210, 215. But he hasn't weighed in yet from what I've seen.
215 pounds?
Yeah.
How tall is he?
6'4", 6'5".
So he's skinnier than I thought he was then.
He's built more like T. Higgins.
Interesting. Okay.
Yep. I would say he's built like T. Higgins as opposed to Evans.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
But I would say his game, I'm a huge, huge fan of his because I think he can.
He's from USC, by the way.
USC, by the way. Receiver from USC, Drake London. He bounced around the slot early in his career. He was a basketball player at USC as well. And then this was his first full year focusing just on football. And you would never guess that. I mean, you would guess that he had a basketball career because he's a ball winner. He can go up and snatch rebounds, but he plays physical. He's not like the classic basketball guy that they can high point balls, and then as soon as they have to block, they get bowed over. Like, he actually like will bring some physicality to the position. He has more athleticism than I think people have given him credit for, but I really want to see what this 40 is. I'm just curious. I think he runs in the mid-4.5s, high mid-5s. or four fives. And I just, the haters all say, oh, he's going to run like, or haters, I should say, the guys that don't like him say, oh, he's going to run a 4.68. And then the guys that like him go, oh, he'll be faster than he is. I think it's somewhere in the middle, as you always say. But I think Drake London, I'm a big fan of his game. I really do think he's a scheme-proof type of talent. And being inside and out, I think the separation question marks that people have had with him, I think those are not as prevalent as you would think when you watch the film, because I thought his quarterbacks would throw the ball so short and so late that he would have to stop and come back for the ball. So, of course, that's why there's lack of separation. Other guys I'm really curious to see, Ron, Garrett Wilson from Ohio State. Has a lot of fans. I think he's more of a toolsy type guy than a complete receiver. I would say his upside is being like an Ayuk.
Wilson's a more slender guy, right? I mean, and that's kind of the interesting part about this class is that it doesn't seem like there's a lot of those like 6'2", 220, like rocked up dudes in this first round conversation.
London's the one like true X. And then you get into that's why it's a really fun receiver class, because last year there's a lot more slot types, mm-hmm. a lot more gadget types, you know, the Rondale Moore of the world, the Elijah Moore of the world. But here it's more, what flavor do you like? You have Jameson Williams, who has a torn ACL, so he's not going to participate in everything, but he'll do interviews and stuff. But he was a legit low 4.3 guy, and he plays that fast. Like, he could take the top off. Jameson Williams from Alabama, by the way. I compare him to DeSean Jackson because I had no one else to compare him to, because he's that dynamic on the deep ball and actually as a kind of has some more skill to him. He's not running, so it's going to be an interesting week. The other guy is Treylon Burks.
So he's the guy that is the bigger body.
That's the other big body. But what's funny is how they use him
from Arkansas.
From Arkansas. We've gotten better during the season going like, that's an offensive guard for the Bengals.
With the draft stuff, I need to know. Yes. So that's why I'm more prone to doing it.
Treylon Burks, he's a receiver from Arkansas. And he is a fascinating prospect because they don't use him what you expect a 6'3", 220-pound guy to be used. They put him in the slot majority of the time. They motion him on over half their plays.
Oh God, power slot.
But he's not a real physical blocker. So,
oh, man. The disappointment in your voice.
I know. So Burks is he's crept up my board. He's going to end up probably receiver three. I'm curious. He'll run really well. Like, he is a smooth athlete. I think he wears 4X gloves. Like, he wears number 16.
So bigger than Kenny Pickett's gloves. Yeah, what you're saying.
Kenny Pickett might be a schmedium. But with Burks, it's such an issue. He's such an interesting prospect. Like, because I see the appeal of him, I really like him. But then the little dog, big dog meme. You know, okay, big dog is Treylon Burks with the ball in his hands, or he's gonna be the target of the play. Then the little dog is Treylon Burks when he's not the target of the play. Like, he kind of just hangs out.
Which is your least favorite thing.
It is with receivers. And it's one of these interviews will be important for him. It's because they just tagged him on the play and they say, hey, you're not getting the ball here. Take it below, because they give him so much to do. I mean, they seriously put him on a jet sweep like every other play. It's kind of funny. But that's what – he's just an interesting project. And I think his upside is probably better than anyone. I see some people comparing him to A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown, I felt like, had more receiver to him. Mm-hmm. But I get it. He's a big, athletic dude that can snatch the ball and take any ball and just run. And he's really smooth. So curious how he tests and everything. Again, this is a really fun class. But the Ohio State guys, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, like them both. I'm more of a fan of Olave. He's my receiver, too. I compared him to Calvin Ridley. I think wherever he goes, he's just going to be a plug and play guy. Like, his upside might not be the other of these guys, but he is at worst, I think, going to be a good number two.
He is, based on everything that I have heard, he is the guy I'm most excited to watch.
Yeah.
He's
a baller.
Based on my tastes as like what I like in receivers, I think that is, people have said as much, that he's going to be the guy I enjoy the most.
Oh, you're going to love him. Yeah. No, that's exactly it. I know. That's actually kind of fun. I could kind of like go like, hey, you're going to like this guy. I did that for Seth Galina from PFF because he likes baby arm quarterbacks that are really smart. I'm like the complete opposite. So Bailey Zappi from Western Kentucky, I was like, hey, you're going to like this guy. He's like, got it. I got it. I know exactly what you mean. The other guy that I really like to have a first-round grade on is Jahan Dotson. He's a receiver from Penn State. He's undersized. He was listed at 184. He's probably about 180. He's probably about 5'10". But he is a complete receiver. He is a really good route runner. He has great hands, like probably some of the best hands in the class. He's 5'10 and change, but he plays like he's 6'2". and like just his catching range and all that. I think he's a three-level guy. He can take the top off. I actually really like him if you went with the Chargers. Like, but he's like a later first. I think he'll end up dropping out of the first round, but it's not because of anything he does. It's just a small. And I think that's the one difference with him, but I think he's just such a skilled and talented player.
Is there a guy that you think maybe a little bit further down the board that's just going to run a crazy 40? Is going to be the guy that we're going to be talking about?
Man. Yeah, the guy that's getting a little bit of hype is Calvin Austin from Memphis, mm-hmm. but he's about 165 pounds. And I don't know how we keep talking ourselves into these guys every single year.
Tutu Atwell won the second round. So.
Not my board. He was, but same kind of thing. But Calvin Awesome is even more. He's a better football player than Tutu was. But he is. I mean, he's tiny. He's 5'7". He measured in already at 5'7", 173. Like, he is a tiny player. He wants to be 6'4". Like, he tries to block guys up. Like, he'll sprint at a safety and bow up on him, and they just like, okay, and they kind of push him away. So you appreciate that. I think he'll run a crazy 40 because he went to Memphis as a track player.
Gotcha.
And then ended up being a receiver. I think he'll have a really good testing. It's just that he's smaller, like I said. A random guy that I think will have a really good testing is Alec Pierce from Cincinnati. I'm going to say stumbled upon to him. Cincinnati had a lot more fun players than you would think, defensively and offensively. It makes sense. They went undefeated the last 2 years. No, they really, really rose up the ranks. I think with Alec Pierce was a volleyball player in high school. All of his family were athletes. I actually think he went to the high school that Matt Bowen from ESPN coaches at.
Oh, nice.
So, and I
Chicago guy.
Yeah. So he is, and he bounced around. They moved him like his freshman year. They redshirted him. They wanted to try him at linebacker, and then they put him back at receiver. He was like a special teams ace. And then last year they finally was, hey, you're a receiver. Look good. Got hurt. Then he finally played receiver this year. But he is all of 6'2". I think, yeah, he's almost 6'3", almost measuring at the Senior Bowl, almost 6'3", about 210. Ball winner type, straight line speed. He got better as a route runner even as this year went along because he just doesn't have a lot of reps. And I think, though, he'll test like crazy. Like, I think he'll be like a 42-inch vert guy, which I don't think anyone's expecting right now.
Very quickly, running backs or tight ends, two or three guys that you feel like you're really watching and you think could pop over the next week or so.
One last receiver I do want to mention is Justin Ross from Clemson. His medicals are going to be huge based on what he is, but that dude's going to be a steal for somebody. Maybe the Bears in like the second-ish round. But, yeah, that's somebody I would really circle is Justin Ross. Tight end-wise, a late watch for me is this guy named Greg Dulcich from UCLA. Right now, he's my tight end, too. I think he's going to blow up this testing right now. He can run like a deer. he measured at the Senior Bowl just under 6'4", about 250. He, like, in that Chip Kelly UCLA offense, they run Y over 100 million times and just different varieties. They'll split him out and run like a deep curl with him. They run these overs, and he just pulls away from everybody. He had decently long arms, over 33-inch arms, I believe, at the Senior Bowl, which is really big to me at tight end position. He wants to block. I compared him to Jared Cook, which is a random comparison, but he's high cut. You know, he tries to block, sometimes doesn't have that leverage. So that's a guy I think he'll have a really good combine. I think he'll just keep rising up boards. A guy that I've liked over the years, because I feel like he's been at Ohio State for 40 years, is Jeremy Ruckert. And I think because of him, and I think the classic line, I think I've seen 1,000 people say this, he's going to be a better pro than college player just because of how Ohio State uses their tight ends. But as far as like being a complete three down wide tight end, able to block and run decent routes and create a little bit after the catch, like, he's a nice little intriguing package. That's interesting about this tight end class. The highest I think any of these guys will go is the end of the second, but there might be like seven of them.
Interesting.
Like,
okay.
going from end of second to middle fourth. Like, there might be a big chunk of these guys. Those two I'm really excited to see run, see exactly how they time up. There's other little project-y types. Isaiah Likely from Coastal Carolina will probably have a good combine right now. And then there's other ones I have up there is Kate Otten. I already mentioned him. Jake Ferguson from Wisconsin, got to get a Badger in there. But just some good wide tight ends as opposed to like – receivers,
but useful players, like guys that are going to be really useful pros that drafted in that, you know, let's say the 58th pick through the 85th pick,
exactly.
Like those types of guys.
Guys that, like, okay, maybe not that all pro type, but guys that, like, oh, they play for 8 to 10 years and they play, you know, 40 snaps a game. And you, like, they finish a game with 3 catches. You're like, okay, good. 3 catches for 38 yards. But it's like those guys play and they actually are tangible plus players. So a lot of those types. And I think that's what's going to be interesting. And then running back wise, again, kind of same thing. There's a lot in that kind of second 30 range. not like the draft a couple of years ago with Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins and CEH, which were more like that late first, mid-second types. I would say these guys are all a tier below those guys. And that's Kenneth Walker, who I think will have a great combine.
Michigan State.
Yes, I'll do better. I'll just rattle these guys off. Breece Hall from Iowa State. Curious what he runs as well. The guy that I kind of has grown a little bit now. I've seen some boards that he's rised up. And he's my running back three right now. Is Tyler Algier from BYU. He's like a mini James Conner. Like, I think that's a good way to put it. I want to see what he runs because I don't think he's like that slow. But if he breaks a 4.6, I'm all over him. Like, but if he runs slower than a 4.6, okay, he's fine. But if he's better than 4.6, it's like, oh, you might have something too. Like, you might actually be a real good player. Jerome Ford from Cincinnati, really liked him. Another Cincinnati skill guy. This guy has legit juice. They can go deep or deep. They can take any play to the house. I really like him. And there's a couple other ones. Isaiah Spiller, other people are higher on. And then another guy that Isaiah Spiller from Texas A&M. The other one that's going to be, I think, is going to be a great role player for a decade is Kyren Williams from Notre Dame. And I compare him to James White. I think that's exactly what he is. Going to be a great pass protecting back and a legit receiver. Naheem Hines like.
Oh, man. Now you're speaking my language.
No, he's already tabbed as a athletic show all-star. Like, he's already circled. Like, you're going to love this guy. But his name's Kyren Williams. I have him as a third-round grade, but I think he's going to be an awesome, awesome player.
All right, we're going to have a lot of time to dig into all of these guys over the next 2 months, considering free agency happens before the draft, which the NFL schedule will never, ever make sense to me. All right, if you guys want to hear more this kind of conversation, a lot of the names that Nate just rattled off, please go listen to the Combine preview that Dane and Lance did last week, pretty much an extension of the chat that we just had. Please go listen to that. I'm sure you guys will not be disappointed. Buddy, it's very good to see you. It always is. We'll be talking a lot here over the next couple weeks, and I'm excited to go play some shuffleboard later.
I can't wait.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options.
Which is why when you choose USAA auto insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today.
USAA.
Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
The Athletic Football Show is sponsored by BetterHelp. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and to make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/maze today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MAYS. All right, as we continue to roll through some of our athletic writers and we break down some of the most interesting teams in the NFL this offseason, we could not do this without chatting with one of our Eagles writers, and here to do that is our good friend, Bo Wolf. Bo, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm worried you're going to roll through me.
No. There's just a lot of them. We're going to do these in an efficient way, but in a way where we're still really digging in and getting the most out of these conversations. So when I was building the initial list of teams that I wanted to talk about as part of this exercise, I don't think you can do it without the Eagles for a bunch of different reasons. Obviously, they have three first-round picks. I went back and I looked at the order today. Not as exciting as it was in, like, October when they had three top seven picks or whatever it was.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, the second half of the season is when, you know, the Dolphins reel off eight straight wins or whatever it is. It looks like they're going to be
the
picking,
Colts were
like,
also terrible early
on. The Colts
on.
Were also terrible. So, I mean, the Eagles were bad, too. So, like, they went on a winning streak. The Dolphins went on a winning streak. So, yeah, the three first-round picks is still nice, but it's not as juicy as it looked back in October.
I mean, you're looking at it right now. It's still 15, 16, and 19. It's not a bad situation. They still control the middle of the draft and in some ways control certain elements of the offseason, because what you can do with those first-round picks, which I'm sure was part of Howie Roseman's calculus when he traded for them, you go a lot of different directions with that. So let's start with that in mind. It is March 1st, 2022. On September 1st of 2022, who do you think the Eagles' starting quarterback is?
I do out of 100 turkeys, and I would say I have about 60 of those 100 turkeys on Jalen Hurts.
That's not that many turkeys when you consider that there are 100 possible turkeys.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, they like Jalen Hurts. He did enough last year for them to want to give him another chance. Everybody in the building loves him. He took a big step as a passer from year one to year two, and I think there's hope that he could maybe take a similar step from year two to year three.
Are there specifics that they've talked about in regard to that? Have you asked anybody on the offensive staff? I'm curious where they think he took steps forward.
Ball security in the pocket is a big thing, and he was a big fumbler in year one, and he only had a couple bad fumbles.
Fumbler.
He was. The Eagles are very familiar with big fumblers from Carson Wentz to Jalen Hurts. He did a much better job protecting the ball in the pocket and just like keeping two hands on the ball in the pocket throughout the progression. That was a big part of the training camp, like just the specifics of stuff they were working on. And I think that, like, Sirianni has said that he thinks that Hurts took a step forward in terms of his accuracy, like, over the course of the season. He's not, like, the world's best passer. I think we know that. But they found a way to build the offense around him. I still think that, like, they are quarterback curious, right? Like, they are not fully committed. They're not putting a ring on it yet.
That's the right way to put it.
I mean, if they can get Russell Wilson, I think they would love to get Russell Wilson. I think if they fell in love with one of the quarterbacks in the draft, you've got three first-round picks, you would certainly pull that trigger. I think they'll be like curious if any other like starting caliber quarterbacks shake loose, but I don't think they're interested in like a mediocre quarterback, like a Kirk Cousins or somebody like that. It just doesn't make any sense.
Nor should they be. Right. And that's the nice situation that they're in, is that you can survive and you can live with Jalen Hurts with no trepidation whatsoever.
Right.
It's only if the clear upgrade is there. So of those 40 other turkeys, how many of them would you commit to Russell Wilson? Is he the most prominent alternate turkey in your mind?
I think so. I mean, and there's like, you know, there's a long history. Howie Roseman, like Russell Wilson is the one who got away in that, was it 2012 draft?
2012.
You know, they wanted Russell Wilson. They wanted, you know, they say they wanted to pull the trigger on him in the second round. They didn't. The Seahawks take him. They end up getting Nick Foles, which worked out.
Who did they draft in the second round that year?
Vinnie Curry.
Vinnie Curry's a good player.
Yeah, he's a good player.
I don't know if you know this. Russell Wilson has had a better NFL career than Vinnie Curry.
That is true, but yeah. Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. So there you go.
I don't think it counts when he leaves and comes back.
Don't tell that to Howie. I mean, if he hadn't been there in the first place, who's to say he would have come back? But yes, I mean, you know, the Eagles are what, one of 31 teams who would like to say that they should have drafted Russell Wilson. But I think there is like a seriousness to he's like the one who got away. And Howie pointed to the Jalen Hurts decision to draft Jalen Hurts, he pointed to the Russell Wilson thing as when you like a quarterback and you see him there in the second round, you should pull the trigger. That's what they learned. So he's like a guy who Howie, I think, would like to close the loop on in a way. But, you know, I'm not a Seahawks writer. I'm like, are the Seahawks really going to trade Russell Wilson at this point?
So we had Charles Robinson on the show earlier this week, and he was talking about that situation. And the way that he presented it, the biggest deterrent to a team trading for Russell Wilson was price. And when the biggest deterrent is price, you only need one that's willing to pay it.
Yeah.
And the Eagles are in such a unique position because they are the team where if you're looking at the resources they have, let's say the price tag starts with three first-round picks, guess what?
Yeah.
The Eagles have three first-round picks. And so it's funny because with their situation, and the fact that they have three in the same draft, you can play out both timelines, right? So let's say they use those three first-round picks to draft three players. hypothetically, let's say it's a pass catcher, a starting corner, and another back seven player. Does that seem reasonable?
I think they're going to draft a pass rusher. Defensive line.
Yes. All right, fine.
I would be shocked if they don't. Yeah.
Fine.
That's okay.
Let's say it's a defensive line. Let's say it's a defense, a pass rusher, a corner, and position X is the third one.
Right.
Those guys all are moderately good players. The draft goes well for them. Or those three first-round picks turn into Russell Wilson. Which is the better situation for the Eagles?
Well,
when are the Eagles better? Right? Which version of the Eagles are better in that specific scenario?
The question, like the answer is, right, the 2022 Eagles are way better with Russell Wilson. The question that Howie Roseman has to answer is, are the 2024 and 2025 Eagles in better shape, like long term, without Russell Wilson, if with those first round picks? I mean, I think Howie's probably thinking, if I can get Russell Wilson for a reasonable price, what's, you know, as you said, what's a reasonable price? Three first round picks, maybe they'd send two this year and one next year, something like that. I think he probably would do it.
I think you have to do it.
I think Howie has always been a, you know, swing for the fences, win this year kind of guy. But I also, like, you know,
Howie
knows
he's a year away from being back on the other side of the building again.
Well, that might be so. I'm not so sure. But, like, I don't know. I have questions, I guess, about, like, fully committing to Russell Wilson. Like, is there a start of a decline? Like, you know, are the weapons with the Eagles any better than they would be with the Seahawks?
Well, they're certainly
like,
not better, right? They're different.
They're different. The offensive line is better. So maybe you think that you convince yourself that you can keep him healthier because of that. You can, like, he won't get sacked as often as he does in Seattle. I think they love Russell Wilson. But, like, I am not all the way there on I would definitely do it just because, like, this team was 4-11 and 1 a year ago. Like, are they really ready to think of themselves as Super Bowl contenders?
I don't know if you have to go that far. I don't know if that deal has to immediately make you a Super Bowl contender for it to be worth it. I think that, let's think about it in 3-year increments. I think that if they trade for Russell Wilson right now, the next 3 years, that 3-year stretch for the Eagles is probably better than whatever they would do with those three first round picks. They are in a very unique position.
Yeah, I think
to
that's
make.
Right.
They are the one team that, again, if price is the biggest barrier here, they are in a very unique position where they're set up to pay that price and still not only survive but just kind of keep on going because of the way that they treated last offseason.
Well, and you have to think about the rest of the construction of the roster too, because, you know, part of the reason that the Eagles got into trouble in the first place was overvaluing their older core, right? You know, these guys who were 30 years old, they thought, like, let's run it back for one more year. And a bunch of those guys declined or got injured. And there are still some of those guys around. Like, if Jason Kelce comes back for another year, he hasn't decided yet. If Fletcher Cox is coming back, but he's a declining player. But if you think those guys are ready to be, like, as good as they can be for one more year, and Russell Wilson comes in and maybe they are, you know, Super Bowl contenders, I'm sure that Howie Roseman is thinking he would do that.
Well, let's even play it out a step further than that. I don't even think those guys necessarily need to be part of the equation. Let's do it to the 2023 Eagles, because the Eagles are in a pretty interesting financial situation right now. If you look at a lot of those contracts, they're going to pay those contracts this year. They can't get out from under pretty much any of them.
Right.
In 2023, that calculus changes a little bit.
That's right.
So in 2023, if you're sitting there, let's say Jason Kelce stays for the next 2 years in this argument, your offensive line is pretty much set. You have two, you know, your tackles are going to be there. You have Jason Kelce back. You have Devontae Smith. You have Dallas Goedert. You have Russell Wilson. On the defensive side of the ball, you really have Darius Slay,
Darius Slay 2 years from now.
It is interesting. But I think that they could have some flexibility next spring to kind of say, all right, this is when we can add some pieces, really make a push. And these are all the things that you have to take into account here. What's your timeline? What sort of prices are you paying? And I'm sure these are the conversations that Howie Roseman, and it's like almost like it's the Pulp Fiction meme with his front office at this point, though.
Right.
He has nobody that works with him anymore. Howie Roseman and the very new members of the Eagles front office, I'm sure these are the things that they're considering.
Well, and that's also why, let's say Russell Wilson is not available. That's why those three first-round picks, like, I would be surprised if the Eagles make all three of those first-round
yes.
picks. I think they would love to move at least one of those picks for a future first or at least a future second, something like that, so that they can give Jalen Hurts this, you know, one more year of a tryout and then be ready to pounce next year in the possibility that they could find another veteran starting quarterback or move up in what's supposed to be a better quarterback draft class.
So let's go the other path here, to go down the other timeline. the Russell Wilson trade or a quarterback trade does not happen. Jalen Hurts is the Eagles' starting quarterback in week one of this year. What are the other things the Eagles need to do to this roster? When you think about what their season looked like last year and where they want to go, what are the next two or three things not quarterback related that they should be thinking about?
Well, that's what's interesting about the Jalen Hurts conversation and like the decision that they have to make, because like what does going all in on Jalen Hurts this year look like? It's like turning into the, you know, the first year of Lamar Jackson's offense with the Ravens, right? Like you got to build the offense around the running game. You probably add a running back in the middle rounds to complement Miles Sanders. You probably add some kind of, I mean, not that this is a big investment, but some kind of blocking tight end. I think they need another wide receiver. I think they think internally that like Quez Watkins is a solid number two and they can get by there. But like then what happens if Devontae Smith gets hurt? Like let's be adults here. They need another another starting caliber wide receiver. And then like what's really important is I mean, the defensive line is supposed to be the backbone of the defense. They were like 30th, 31st in sack rate last year. That's not good enough. Derek Barnett's going to be a free agent. He was a disappointment this season. Brandon Graham is coming off a season-ending injury. They signed Josh Sweat to an extension. But, like, defensive end and getting pressure on the quarterback is, like, their number one priority, I think, fixing that this offseason. And then I sort of expect them to make some kind of splash at safety. You know, they've got Rodney McLeod and Anthony Harris both being free agents. My guess is they maybe bring one of those guys back. They have Marcus Epps, but I think they're going to sign some. I mean, this is a good free agent safety class.
I think it's always a good free agent safety class, and I think the Eagles are aware of that,
yeah,
and have built their team with that in mind.
Yes, and they have had like much more success doing that than drafting safeties. So I think like they are very aware of that. You know, I've got my eye on Justin Reed because he was a player the Eagles were very interested in the pre-draft process. He's young. That sort of makes sense to me. But yeah, I mean, they have to turn over three spots in the secondary, and they have to fix the pass rush. That's their number one operating procedure, I think.
It was funny because when we were talking about the Eagles before last season, I was confounded by them. I wasn't sure what they wanted to be, what they were going to be.
And I don't think they knew. They didn't know until halfway through the season.
And now I still don't really know, because there's, again, we have these two different paths that they could go down.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, if you're really committing to Jalen Hurts, are you really committing to Jalen Hurts? And if you're not, then are you giving him the best chance to convince you, right? If you don't build the offense around what he brings to the table as a running quarterback, then what's the point of even giving him the chance, right? Because you're not seeing what could be the best version of him.
And we talked about this during the season, and I think it's a really relevant conversation. What is that path and that plan do to your other offensive talent? What is that version of the offense do to Devontae Smith's development? Do you get the most out of Dallas Goedert, right, if that's the way that you're playing? There are just so many different layers to the two ways they could treat this. And if it is the Jalen Hurts path and we're just building on what the 2021 season looks like, what is the next step for that version of the Eagles look like? I really have no idea, and right, that's why they're so fascinating to me, because those picks and just them holding the cards that they hold right now, there's so many different ways that this just could spray.
And it's also, like, from a team-building perspective, it's an interesting conversation from, like, Howie Roseman's job, because he always talks about, you know, my job is to get the guys for the coaching staff, right? But that can't be your only job, because, like, you can't just get guys who are going to fit Jonathan Gannon's defense if there's a chance Jonathan Gannon gets a head coaching job next year and you're going to have to change defensive scheme, right? That can't be the only job. And so part of his job is to build the roster so that it could be turnkey for whoever the next quarterback is. But also part of his job is to build the offense around Jalen Hurts for this season. So, I mean, those are tough questions, tough dynamics about what his job are.
Is there anything else Eagles related that's been on your mind? Just like the pressing questions that it's like, all right, this needs to be answered. This is one of the priorities this offseason.
It's sort of the opposite of that. I feel like there's a lot of talk about the Eagles like need interior offensive line help to replace Jason Kelce eventually. And I feel like that's just not true. Even if he doesn't come back, because they lost Brandon Brooks, but Brandon Brooks has played like three games the past 2 years. They've had a bunch of guys like Isaac Seumalo could play center if they need. Landon Dickerson could play center if they need.
Play center in college.
Right. Like one of those two guys is probably the heir apparent. They've got a bunch of other guys who can start at guard between like Nate Herbig and Jack Driscoll and some of these other guys. Sua Opeta, I have to shout out. But like that spot could be fixed in the middle rounds. You've got Jeff Stoutland, who can turn like you or me, or probably you, into a starting caliber offensive lineman.
What are you trying to say?
I'm playing offensive lineman.
That's fair. I'm checking in at a gentleman's like 188 pounds right now. I'm not sure I'd be.
I think Stout can mold you.
And it's funny because you think about it, and theoretically, think about the offense, just the spots. There are a lot of spots that are filled. Like, if Kelsey's back, right, the offensive line is pretty much set.
Right.
You have that one pass catcher spot you probably need.
It's crazy to me that, I mean, they're not going to come out and say, like, we need a number two receiver. But, like, they need another receiver. Like,
but if they go get
badly.
One, like, let's say they go get one, and then you have that offensive stat or that offensive roster, if you drop a quarterback into it, it suddenly becomes really interesting. And it brings us back around. That's just why, if I'm trying to look at the chessboard and how it's set up right now, they are the team that makes the most sense from a resources perspective, from a need perspective, and from a timeline perspective to go make a move like the Russell Wilson trade.
Now, do you think there's any chance that Kyler goes? You think it's all just
I think it's a lot
positioning
of bluster.
For the –
Yeah, I think it's a lot of contract maneuvering for the most part.
Because there's a guy, I mean, like with the offense they're already running, give up the picks for Kyler Murray, all of a sudden it looks a little bit different.
I would be betting more turkeys on Russell Wilson at this point.
Oh, as a realistic possibility, yeah. But if you're Howie, like, what would you look into? I don't know.
Lot of intrigue as it relates to the Eagles, and that is why we're chatting about them. Bullwolf, thank you very much, my friend. It is always good to talk with you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
All right, I'm thrilled now to welcome our Packers writer at The Athletic, someone that we needed to chat with if we were going to talk about the most interesting NFL teams of the 2022 offseason. Matt Schneidman, thank you very much for doing this, my friend.
Needed
it's good to
me.
See you.
Needed me.
We are,
I'm here.
I'm so glad we get to do all of these in person.
Yes.
I'm getting to meet so many people that I have never met before. I've met you many times,
yes,
but just other people who work for the company, which has been really nice. And like I mentioned, we cannot do this exercise without talking about the Packers, because this is the first domino that has to fall, mm-hmm, for the rest of the NFL offseason. As David Hellman is way too loud while I'm trying to work over here. This is the first domino that has to fall for the rest of the NFL offseason to kind of fall into place here. So what is your read on how this is ultimately going to play out and how it will impact how other teams have to search for their quarterback in the next 2 months?
Yeah, I'd be stunned if Aaron Rodgers isn't with the Packers.
Same. Do you think we're spending way too much time on this?
I think so, and I think he loves it.
He absolutely does.
I think he loves it.
He absolutely
He'll
does.
Say, oh, I don't listen to any of the outside stuff, or I don't care about what anyone else says. He loves it. He put out that self-gratitude post, which is fine. I'm not ratting on him for that.
Gratitude is important.
Gratitude,
right?
Is important, yeah.
Yeah.
Then he goes on McAfee the next day, and he's like, oh, I don't know why people thought I was going to make some sort of decision. I thought I was just coming on here to chat. No, he knows exactly what he's doing. Listen, if you need one sign that he's coming back to Green Bay, Brian Gutekunst told beat reporters last week that the hiring of Tom Clements, who was the quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator, and assistant head coach for the Packers from 2006 to 2016.
And I didn't realize it was that long.
And a guy that Rodgers goes out of his way, unprompted, to praise for his development more times than I can count in, this is now my fourth year covering the team. He said the hiring of him is an example of how Rodgers is more involved in the decision-making process for moves that directly affect his job. Aaron Rodgers is not telling the Packers to hire Tom Clements if he's not coming back. Aaron Rodgers does not tell Tom Clements, who was retired and 68 years old, to come out of retirement to come back to the Packers if he's not coming back. He doesn't tell his guy, his coach, to come back to the Packers to coach starting quarterback Jordan Love. Sure, Tom Clements came out of retirement to coach quote-unquote Josh Rosen with Arizona a couple years ago, but he knew they were going to take a quarterback number one overall in Kyler Murray. He's coming back for Aaron Rodgers, and they both know that. I would imagine they're ironing out what the contract will look like, and we'll get all the news at once. Now, we're here in Indianapolis. I was thinking about going to camp outside Pat McAfee's studio a couple blocks away to see if Aaron Rodgers showed up today. He did not, but I'd be stunned if he is not here. And Brian Gutekunst just told us that not one other general manager has approached him to see what it would cost to get Aaron Rodgers. I believe that might be because either they know he's staying or Gutekunst just isn't entertaining those offers because he knows he has no intention to trade him.
So if it's about the other considerations, what are the other considerations?
Retirement. I think that's the only one.
I mean, with the contract stuff.
Oh, with the contract
stuff. So do you think,
stuff.
I mean, obviously there's been talk about what he might want. In your mind, what does the contract have to look like? Is that an important part of this? Is it about him being the highest paid player in the league? What does the length look like? What are the different factors and details that are probably being ironed out right now as they figure this out?
I would imagine they're deciding between 2 or 3 year extension. Now, he's still under contract for 2022. So this is a guy who has said spending time away from the team last offseason, you know, not quenched. That's a bad word there. If I knew how to use words, I'd be a writer. Alleviated his fear of retirement. He no longer has that fear. So how much longer does he want to play? He previously said he wanted to play well into his 40s for the Packers. Now that he doesn't fear retirement, fear the unknown of what it would be like because he got that taste being away last offseason, does he maybe want to play for 3 more years instead of 5 or 2 more years instead of 4? I could see a 2-year extension for around $50 million fully guaranteed that keeps him under contract through 2024.
I mean, that'd be pretty damn good for the Packers.
Yeah, it would be. And people are saying, oh, he's 38, but guess what? He's the back-to-back MVP. He can play at this level or at worst a top 5, top 6 quarterback level. So for why not the next 3-4 years?
You mean 2 years at $50 million a year or two years $50 million total?
No. Aaron Rodgers isn't taking a Tom Brady, Drew Brees.
I was confused. Okay.
No, 2 years, that, $50 million a year.
That makes a lot more sense. Okay, yeah. So let's say it's 2 years.
And he's rightful. With no offense to Greg Jennings, Aaron Rodgers deserves that, and he should be asking for that.
100%. So if that's the deal, like let's say his cap hit in 2023 is $50 million, where does that leave the Packers financially in terms of the other moves they now have to make to pry open this window if 38-year-old Aaron Rodgers is going to be their quarterback?
Well, down the line, 2024 cap could be an issue. But if we're talking about this year...
Or even next year.
Extending Aaron Rodgers for 2 years, you know, whatever it may be, $50 million a year, $46 million a year, that should free up about $11 million in cap this year if they extend him. His cap number is around $46 million right now. I believe it would lower it if they gave him that sort of extension to around $35 million. Right now, I believe they're about $28 million over the cap after they restructured Bakhtiari, Aaron Jones, and Kenny Clark. You know, in terms of the next domino to fall would be Davante Adams. And if they franchise tag him, that's $20.12 million on the cap, fully guaranteed. But if they extend Devontae long-term, they could get his cap number down to as little as $9 million for this year. So that could be another 11 off the cap. They could save around $20 million against the cap, almost get down to the cap number that they need to get below by March 16th by extending their two best players. That could,
and there are other levers that they can pull, right? The Smiths.
Cutting Za'Darius Smith would free up about $15.4 million. Cutting Preston would free up about 12.5, I believe it is. They're going to keep one of them. I would expect it to be Preston. But listen, we've been doing this for long enough that we know, yes, the cap is important, but there are ways to get under it. And the Packers know what they're doing. They have people paid a lot of money to do that exact thing. So, yes, Aaron Rodgers is the first domino to fall, but I don't think it should hold up too many other things.
It doesn't seem like it would. Correct me if I'm wrong about this. You said you covered the team for 4 years, and I've paid a lot of attention to the Packers for a while. They weren't a team that was always ready and willing to pull some of these financial levers.
Right.
Though. The fact that they added 2 voidable years to Kenny Clark's deal, the fact that they're moving all of this money around and converting these bonuses and kind of saying this is a problem for future Brian Gutekunst is a new development for them as the way that they operate. What do you think is driving that? Do you think it's the window with Aaron Rodgers? Do you think it's kind of a new approach with the front office? What do you think are the most important factors involved in that sort of mindset and approach?
I think it might be a little bit of both. I saw someone say on Twitter the other day, and back when this happened, I was 14 years old, but if they had gone all in for the end of Brett Favre's career, they wouldn't have been able to afford their 2010 Super Bowl team and all the depth that came along on that team and helped them win a title. So, listen, you can say the same thing about this time, but I think it's a combination of Aaron Rodgers obviously still has a lot left, and they want to maximize that, and they can't finish these 30-whatever years with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers saying we only won two Super Bowl titles with both of them. They need another Super Bowl title to consider his tenure and everyone else's tenure around Aaron Rodgers in the last 17 years a success. And they'll do whatever it takes to get it, even if it means, you know, screwing themselves over a little bit down the road. I do think maybe a little bit is, I'm not saying Brian Gutekunst is trying to distance himself from the Ted Thompson regime. He obviously learned everything he knows about being a GM from Ted pretty much. But we've seen it. Ted never really used to make in-season splashes or really even show interest in them. Like Devontae Adams tells us, who Ted drafted in 2014, he never really got his hopes up for big in-season trades or acquisitions or even interest in players.
Even off-season acquisitions.
Exactly, because he knew the Packers wouldn't do it. Brian Gutekunst's first offseason in charge, he signed Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Billy Turner, and Adrian Amos.
Yes.
And this offseason, or this season, I remember asking Devontae Adams, you know, you've said before that you don't get your hopes up for this kind of stuff in regards to the Odell Beckham Jr. rumors when that was happening. But are you getting your hopes up for this? And Devontae was like, I'm not going to lie, I can't help it. And like, I sense maybe a change a little bit in philosophy, maybe more of taking those big swings or at least considering them, because the Packers know they're so close. They've been so close the last 3 years. And if they get through this stretch, it could be another 1, 2, 3 years, and they don't have a Super Bowl title, then that's a failure by the GM, that's a failure by the head coach, that's a failure by everyone involved, and they can't have that attached to their name. Because like Brian Gutekunst told us last week, we're the Green Bay Packers, and there comes along with that a expectation that they have fallen short of the last 3 years that they can't fall short of again.
It is funny when you think about the 2019 free agent class, just how different that felt in the moment. It's not that long ago.
Not that long
like,
ago.
Like this version of how they operate is still relatively new, and that's why as I'm thinking about all of these moves, they're just doing shit the Saints would do, it still feels strange. Like reconciling it in your mind with this franchise is still, there's a barrier there just because we haven't seen it that often before.
The one notable, well, there are more than one notable, but the one big splash Ted Thompson made was signing Charles Woodson, which turned out all right.
15 years ago.
It was 15 years ago. It turned out all right because that's something that Ted just didn't do, and I never covered him, but just talking to people who did cover him, that just wasn't his thing. And like Brian Gutekunst is at least showing the willingness to, and now sometimes it has played to his benefit that he didn't. Like in week 6 this season, Stephon Gilmore was on the trading block, and it turned out, what'd the Panthers give up, a 6th-round pick? And everyone was like, why didn't the Packers do that? Because Jaire Alexander had just gone down, injured his shoulder against the Steelers, a bad injury, and Brian Gutekunst doesn't touch Stephon Gilmore, and instead goes and picks up a guy named Rasul Douglas off the Cardinals practice squad as a depth piece. He doesn't play the first couple weeks. Instead, Isaac Yiadom does, who they got in a trade from the Giants in the preseason.
I was there the day he got there.
For Josh Jackson. Isaac Yiadom is not a good cornerback. Against the Bears in week 6, Isaac Yiadom has a penalty and allows a touchdown on the first drive, gets pulled for Rasul Douglas. Rasul Douglas never saw the bench again. So, yes, we can nitpick. You know, the Packers don't make these big splash moves here, and that's completely right, and they will acknowledge that that's not how they've traditionally done business and not traditionally thrown all their chips into a basket, which they're probably going to here in the next couple weeks for Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. But at times it has worked out, you know, picking and choosing here. They didn't go for K.J. Wright in free agency. They went and signed Devondre Campbell for $2 million. He becomes a first-team All-Pro. They go and get Rasul Douglas. He's getting votes for Pro Bowl. Like, he had 5 interceptions in like 7 games, a couple pick sixes. So there's a reason these guys get paid to be GMs and we don't, but it definitely has been a slight change in how they do business.
So when we think about the dominoes that are going to fall, the Rodgers domino, the Adams domino, and the money that they're going to free up, and you talk about, all right, they need to win one in order to make good on this. What does that look like? What are the 3 or 4 moves, in your opinion, as they consider the next steps this offseason that have to happen for this team to finally get over the hump?
Well, it starts at the wide receiver position, I think. And people who say Aaron Rodgers doesn't have enough weapons, that's silly. But he won't if their free agency class pans out how I think it will. Devontae Adams is going to be a Packer. Letting him walk in free agency, letting him hit free agency is a fireable offense, especially considering the fact that there are plenty more teams who can entice Devontae with an offer that he wants more so than the Packers. They can just franchise tag him. He wouldn't want that. I know he doesn't want that.
There is a 0% chance he's going to be a free agent.
Brian Gutekunst said last week when we asked him, is it possible he walks? He said, yeah, possibly. But guess what? It's possible that I walk outside in 5 seconds and get hit by a car, but I'm not going to do that. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. So Devontae Adams will be there. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is an unrestricted free agent. He might be around $8 million a year. I think that's too cheap for a guy whose production is so sporadic. Alan Lazard will probably be back on a second-round tender. But then who do you have after that? Like, Randall Cobb, cutting him would free up $6.8 million in cap. I would expect him to be back on a more cap-friendly deal. I don't think he'd be too eager to play anywhere but with Aaron Rodgers. Amari Rodgers showed nothing last year. Equanimeous St. Brown hasn't shown anything since joining the team in 2018. I think a wide receiver, a legitimate number two speedster, maybe a guy in the draft like Chris Olave, Jameson Williams, because I don't think they're going to be able to afford a top-end guy in free agency. Maybe they go and get a Sammy Watkins type guy. I think you need a number two wide receiver. Second piece is a defensive lineman to go alongside Kenny Clark. Besides Kenny Clark, they haven't had anyone formidable the last couple of years. Like, they've cycled in and out Kingsley Keke, Tyler Lancaster. Dean Lowry had a decent year.
He had his best year last year.
Best year last year, but still, you need someone else. And then
especially if you're going to have less depth on the edge. If you're gonna,
right.
I mean, obviously they dealt without Za'Darius Smith this
exactly.
year. But if you're going to walk into the season and you're going to have Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, and Shrug.
Maybe Whitney Mercilus. I mean, Whitney Mercilus went down. Third thing is special teams. And they obviously hired Rich Bisaccia. And the interesting thing about Rich is, as Mike Sando noted in one of his recent stories for us, of the 14 teams that made the playoffs, the Raiders used the highest percentage of starters on special teams. The Packers used the fewest.
That's really interesting.
It's no coincidence that the worst special teams unit in the league, whose head coach said right after the season ended he would do studies around the league and consider using more starters on special teams, because they don't. The Packers just throw, like, the fourth linebacker, the sixth wide receiver on special teams. What the Packers need to do, and this is the third thing, is get special teamers who can also play other positions, not guys who play other positions who can also fill in on special teams. Like, I'm not saying they should get a Matthew Slater or an Anthony Levine, but they need specialists to play special teams. And that's huge, because they got destroyed in all facets. Like, and it was just a microcosm of how their whole season went, that they had 10 guys on the field to defend against Robbie Gould's game-winning field goal in the divisional round. Will that change under Rich Bisaccia? I'm assuming so. Yes, A.J. Dillon did break his rib blocking on a kickoff return in the playoffs, and that is the downside of potentially using starters. But
I don't think you can operate that way.
Exactly. But you got to get more starters and more impact guys on special teams.
So Rich Bisaccia is a coach that came in. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of coaches that went out. And the Packers are now the latest example. It's just fascinating to me to look at that tree of coaches, right? You look at what is happening with the Rams and has happened over the last 5 years. Matt LaFleur is a product of that. He was the offensive coordinator on that staff. He gets hired away, and you have to replace those guys. It's happening in San Francisco now for the first time, where they're starting to lose those guys, and there's attrition because people are chasing that system. Now it's come for the Packers.
Yes.
And Nathaniel Hackett is gone. Luke Getsy is gone. There are promotions, there are things that are shuffling, but that brain drain is real, and it has a real effect on the way that teams operate, especially teams driven on offense like the Packers have been.
Mm-hmm.
What is your feel on the guys that have filled those roles, what that staff looks like, and how they're going to navigate that situation, which for them, under this regime, is pretty new?
Well, the only real new guy on that offensive staff is Tom Clements, who we talked about. They pretty much promoted everywhere. I mean, the new offensive coordinator to fill in Nathaniel Hackett's role is Adam Stenovich, who is their offensive line coach, who's done a phenomenal job the last 2 years, given all the injuries they've had to David Bakhtiari tore his ACL, Alan Jenkins tore his ACL, Billy Turner had a knee injury, Josh Myers, their starting center, second round pick, had a couple injuries this year and missed a large chunk of the season.
Let's be clear. He 100% deserves the job. He deserved an offensive coordinator role somewhere based on the job that he had done.
And,
but now you have two guys. your offensive line coach becoming your offensive coordinator, he was their run game coordinator, has a huge hand in that. But the guy's responsible for your install meetings, the way that your passing game looks, all of those things. Those guys are now gone.
Right. And then they promoted Jason Vrabel, their wide receivers coach, to their passing game coordinator. And then Justin Outen, who was their tight ends coach, who had a role in their run game, is now the Broncos offensive coordinator.
So this is what happens.
They promoted John Dunn to tight ends coach. Basically just promotions. I get the sense, obviously, we haven't talked to LaFleur since all those, well, we talked to him after the season, but
since all the shuffling has
happened. We talked to him tomorrow at 1:45, but he wants to keep it within house. He could have easily gone out and gotten, you know, guys who he's known from past stops, but he obviously wants to keep it in house with guys that he knows, guys that know his system. Nathaniel Hackett tried to, it seems, get as many Packers coaches as possible over to Denver. Like, guys want to stick together with this system. And it is coming for the Packers. I can't imagine Matt LaFleur is happy about that because he got to kind of keep all his guys for a couple years. And as people tried to pry guys from McVay and Shanahan, you know, yeah, they took Robert Saleh. He was an offensive guy. But, like, for the first couple of years, nobody – Nathaniel Hackett got the Falcons interview 2 years ago, but people, I got the sense, kind of wanted to feel out if LaFleur really knew what was going on.
There's also that constant conversation of, well, they have Rodgers.
Exactly.
I mean,
there's always going to be that conversation.
But that's, I mean, it's so interesting when you look at the different ways that teams have handled this, because the Rams have handled it the opposite way. They go outside when these things tend to happen. Mm-hmm. They go look for people from different places. Kevin O'Connell is a perfect example, right? Kevin O'Connell wasn't just a low-level assistant that they continued to promote.
Right.
The Packers are going the opposite route. How does that end up working out? I have no idea.
No idea.
But this is...
Like they promoted Luke Butkus from assistant offensive line coach to offensive line
the
coach.
The most offensive line...
He is the most offensive line coach offensive line coach of all time.
And his name is Luke Butkus. It's incredible. If you guys have not seen Luke Butkus, I highly encourage you to go look on the Packers coaching website and see what Luke Butkus looks like. You can also see Tom Clements in an old Packers polo that is his old staff photo that they just repurposed.
He said, I'm not taking a new photo. Just put up my old one.
When you're 68 years old and you've been retired for a couple of years, you're not taking new photos.
Nope.
You are only working with Aaron Rodgers every single day. And I guess Tom Clements is the new voice in the room, right? Obviously, he's an old voice. Mm-hmm. But as it relates to this staff, because I think the question is always going to be, how do you balance continuity and, you know, communication, ease of communication? We know how we operate. We know how we can talk to each other with kind of germinating these things with new ideas. That's always the balance. And Tom Clements is the guy who can potentially bring a fresh voice to this, but he's also 70 years old.
It is an old voice, but a fresh one at the same time. Listen, we know both you and I have talked to Aaron Rodgers enough that he needs to be around people he respects and he knows. And that was obviously I'm not saying he didn't respect Mike McCarthy, but at the end of that relationship, it was obviously something, well, maybe he didn't. That was obviously something that dragged it down. It's no coincidence that he and Matt LaFleur are on extremely good terms. Rodgers is actually a former teammate of Adam Stenovich, who was in camp with the Packers back in Rodgers' rookie year, I believe. Now he brings Tom Clements back. At this point in his career, if Aaron Rodgers is going to keep advancing, he doesn't want to start from scratch with any coaches. Yeah. Like, Tom Clements knows everything Aaron Rodgers has ever done in his life. If Aaron Rodgers has a new idea, Tom Clements knows how to implement it. And the same goes for, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but when we talk about getting wide receivers, I wasn't here for the rookie years of Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, James Jones, Greg Jennings, Randall Cobb. But Aaron Rodgers doesn't have a track record of being extremely productive with rookies. They normally ease them in. Like, he has excelled with guys he's familiar with, guys he has years with, and like with Amari Rodgers. Amari Rodgers did nothing this year. We all thought he was going to come in and be the slot guy and maybe take snaps from Randall Cobb. You need to put in years with this guy for him to earn your trust.
Devontae's the best example.
Whether that's the best
receiver in the league now.
Or a player.
It's going to be hilarious when he retires in like 3 days, and the Tom Clemens thing doesn't matter. And how are you sleeping,
no
by the way?
Oh, I'm sleeping fine.
You doing okay?
Because McAfee's show doesn't come on while I sleep. I'll tell you this. It was funny. You never know what he's going to do, because I was told by a source that I won't name, but someone 3 days, 4 days, 5 days before camp started last year, that Aaron Rodgers was not showing up. And they were steadfast in that belief. It was right after Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams simultaneously posted the Jordan and Pippen Instagram photos. Mm-hmm. And the question was, do they mean last year was the last dance or this year is the last dance? And I was told that it was last year. He did not plan to come back. And then things obviously escalated and came to fruition there. Deadline spur action. And he dragged it out for as long as possible. He said he wouldn't do that this offseason. And even if it seems like he's going to come back, he might retire. Even if it seems like he's going to retire with that Instagram post he posted, he might come back. The thing I've learned about Aaron Rodgers, you can guess whatever you want. You might be wrong. It's impossible to read the guy. And even if you have a good read, he might just be screwing with you on purpose.
One of a kind, that man. And you,
he pays the bills.
Yeah, he certainly does.
He pays the bills.
We'll all be paying attention because, as I mentioned, that domino is the first one to fall, and the rest of the NFL offseason is going to fall into place as the Packers situation does. Matt Schneidman, thank you very much for the time, my friend. Always good to chat with you.
Thank
you. I'm sure we will catch up very soon.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys. That's all we got today. Thank you so much to Matt. Thank you to Bo, and always to Nate. Really appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back tomorrow with some more athletic writers. We're going to have three other writers on. We're going to dig more into these teams that we feel like are going to define the 2022 offseason. In the meantime, please rate and review the podcast on your podcast platform of choice. We'd really appreciate that. Please subscribe to The Athletic. $1 a month for the next 6 months. Well, is that correct? $1 a month for the next 6 months at theathletic.com/football show. If you do not have an Athletic subscription, now, intrigue season, free agency, draft, now is the time to go grab one. So please do that if you have not. As always, guys, really appreciate you guys listening. We'll talk to you soon.
This was The Athletic Football Show.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.